Welcome to Critical Issues Commentary, the radio ministry of Twin City Fellowship, a non-denominational Christian church in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We're speaking today with Bob DeWay, author of Critical Issues Commentary. Robert, over the last few weeks, we've looked at the Christian attitude toward God, toward other Christians, toward non-Christians, and now we're going to be speaking about the Christian attitude towards civil rulers. There's something about the first seven verses that some question about being really part of Romans 13. Any comment?
That's called source criticism. Especially in the middle part of the 20th century, it was popular to try to the JEDP in the Old Testament, the Q in the New Testament.
We talked about that.
Yeah, and then some of these, like Romans 13, 1 through 7, there are a few people say, I don't think that really fits there. Somebody must have brought it in from somewhere else. But as a matter of fact, it does fit here. And this source criticism is based on somebody's theory, not any actual materials anybody has. In other words, there's no extant Romans manuscript that's lacking those verses.
Excellent.
Okay, so really, as far as I'm concerned, I interpret the Bible that's in front of me. Not that I won't pay attention to the possibility if there are Greek manuscripts that are extant that have different wording, that's worthy to look into.
Excellent.
Okay, to find the best reading. But when all the manuscripts have a section, there's no reason to assume it's not supposed to be there. Interpret what's in front of us.
Well, some of the simple logic that would suggest this does fit here is the idea that when we left chapter 12, it had to do with we're not allowed to take vengeance.
Right, exactly. So how do we relate to our enemies, really, is what the end of 12 was about. And Paul is saying that's the business of civil authorities.
They have the right, or it's their job, in fact, to take punitive action.
Yeah, so if you've got evildoers and you are harmed by them, you have the privilege to go to civil authorities, and they're the ones that are going to take vengeance if it's going to be done at all. So I think this very well fits. Not only is it fit, it's something that Christians need to listen to, because this has been ignored an awful lot in church history to a great degree of harm to the people who have ignored it.
I happened to be reading in Jeremiah this morning just the whole idea of what our attitude toward the civil authorities ought to be. And in Jeremiah 29, verse 7, the admonition, this is about the time when the nation was going to be taken to Babylon, and this was a prayer, it was a message to the exiles from Jeremiah, said, "Seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile, and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare you will have welfare." Now that seems, we talk about meaning, implication, application, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to have an implication here, or an application here.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that being how the same thing is said in the New Testament about the Christian's relationship to civil authorities, that we should pray for civil authorities, we should obey them. There are some exceptions, and we'll talk about that a little bit here as we get into this section of Romans 13. And certainly the idea of creating some sort of a Christian army in order to have a Christian insurrection to establish a Christian kingdom, it's certainly not envisioned anywhere in the New Testament. So much of church history has been Christians thinking they ought to be the civil authorities, or they ought to control the civil authorities. And then they start wars, as we saw in the Middle Ages and the Crusades and so on. I don't know how anybody reading the Bible could ever get the idea that's what we're supposed to do.
Exactly. There are actually a couple of New Testament passages that we probably should comment on. I'll throw a couple to you, and you might have a reference.
Well, you know what? Why don't we read a little bit of Romans 13 so they know what we're talking about?
Okay. How about the first seven verses?
Sure, I'll do that. "Let every person be in subjection to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. Therefore, he who resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. For rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same." I think that's far enough to read.
Okay.
Now.
Okay? Excellent. I have a number, but I think they're going to come out in our reading. We're going to have, for those of you who want to take a couple notes, Mark 12, 17, 1 Timothy 2, verses 1 to 3, Titus 3, 1, and 1 Peter 2, verses 13 to 17. But let's start with that first verse. It said, "Every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. Okay, take it from there.
Talk about a couple of grammatical issues here in interesting notes from the Greek. One of the things that stood out to me as I was looking at this Romans 13, 1 and 2 is that the Greek word for be in subjection is hupotasso, and the Greek word for resist is antitasso.
Okay,
it's the same word only with a different prefix. So hupotasso means to be under, okay, to put oneself under, and antitasso is to set oneself against.
All right.
And so it's not very hard to interpret this. It's very clear. We're supposed to be under the civil authorities, the governing authorities, and we're not to set ourselves against them or to be insurrectionists.
Justin Martyr had a comment that relates to what we're talking about.
Here it is. This is from Justin Martyr, First Apology, chapter 17, and this is from mid-second century, so not too long after the death of the apostles. Justin Martyr was converted, and here's his comment about Christians relating to the Roman Empire. And he said this, quote, "And everywhere we, more readily than all men, endeavor to pay to those appointed by you the taxes, both ordinary and extraordinary, as we have been taught by him," that is the Lord, "for at that time some came to him and asked him if we ought to pay tribute to Caesar, and he answered, quote, tell me whose image does the coin bear, unquote, and they said, Caesar's, and he answered them, quote, render unto Caesar's the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's, unquote, whence to God alone we render worship, but in other things we gladly serve you, acknowledging you as kings and rulers of men, praying that with your kingly power you be found to possess sound judgment. But if you pay no regard to our prayers and frank explanations, we shall suffer no loss, since we believe and are persuaded that every man will suffer punishment in eternal fire according to the merit of his deed, and will render account according to the power he's received from God, as Christ said, to whom God has given more, a more shall be required. So what he's saying is that we'll be good citizens, we'll pay our taxes, we'll serve you as the king, but we're going to worship God alone.
Exactly.
I think that that is a little slice of church history to show us that in about 150 AD, how Christians saw their role in regard to the civil government.
Well, that's perfect. That's an example of an external document. It's not scripture. It was a historical document that verifies the same thing.
So it shows that even the very earliest church took these teachings to heart, and they didn't see themselves as having the role of trying to take over the Roman government and rule over men, but they saw themselves as praying for their civil leaders and paying taxes and so forth.
Exactly. You mentioned subject yourselves. Is that the same as obey?
It says to put oneself under, okay?
Okay.
So certainly we should obey the civil rules and laws that are given, because if you look at verse 2, those who resist oppose the ordinance of God. Then in verse 3, rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior. So it has to do with behavior. It has to do with this is the law. Here's what we're under. We should be law-abiding citizens if we're going to be Christian. And I think there's a temptation here. And some have asked, well, I wonder what the occasion was going on in Rome that Paul was talking about. Well, he hadn't gotten to Rome yet. He was writing this to a church he had not visited.
Right.
But the Jews had been kicked out of Rome, and that's mentioned in the book of Acts. And there may have been some Jewish Christians who resented acknowledging a heathen king, especially wicked ones like they often had in Rome. With that in his background, it's always possible that the early church would take the attitude, because we are serving God, we don't have to listen to these pagans that are the civil rulers.
Well, the backup for that, Acts 5:29, Peter and the apostles answered, we must obey God rather than men. But that's a different kind of a delineation here, isn't
it? Well, in Acts 5:29, they've been told they could not preach the gospel.
Exactly.
Okay. So like Justin Martyr said, if you try to tell us that we can't serve God or you won't acknowledge God, well, there's hell awaiting you. But, you know, God is going to be the judge.
But that's the dividing line.
Well, I think that Christians have often asked that. Now, Paul isn't explicitly stating any exceptions here. We know there are exceptions from other scriptures, like the one that you cited. But Paul is just saying, as a general rule, Christians should be good citizens They should pay their taxes. They should obey the civil laws. And they should not view themselves as insurrectionists because they don't particularly like the government they may be under.
But why should they subject themselves to the governing authorities?
Because they're established by God. It says here. Now, Paul, when he was preaching in Acts 17, said that God draws the boundaries of the nations. Okay? God has ordained that there be civil authorities, and that is part of the way through common grace. So I can't remember if I explained common grace, but it's the idea that life on earth is not as bad as it could be because God is still restraining, and the rain falls on the just, the unjust, and God is kind to ungrateful and evil men. I think we maybe talked about this last week.
Yes.
So because there's such a thing as common grace, God is restraining evil. And in the rare cases where there's total anarchy, it's almost like hell on earth. And there's a few places in the world even today that it's like that.
But the strange thing is you look at all the things going on in the world, this is what restraint looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be worse during the Great Tribulation. But nevertheless, the fact that let's just talk about America, where we live. We happen to live in a country that actually has a pretty decent system of law. If you've been in other countries, you'll find out ours is much better. For the good law-abiding citizen, generally speaking, it's a very rare thing that we have any fear of the police.
Exactly.
I have no fear of the police. I look at them as my friend. They're protecting me. They're keeping people that are murderers and robbers and drug dealers at least hiding, if not, okay, they're not captured or whatever.
Well, it's not welcomed in the society.
But yes. See, yeah, well, the point is the law-abiding citizen in America, generally speaking, has nothing to fear from civil authorities.
Yes.
Okay? So we are blessed because there's some restraint going on to the lawlessness that is the tendency of the sinful heart of man. Now, Christians who think that they have to become insurrectionists and try to overthrow civil governments are just basically in disobedience to what Paul said here in Romans 13, that we shouldn't be resisting antitasso, setting ourselves against this authority. We may look, and Paul was writing when the Roman emperors certainly were not model citizens, okay? So we can see a lot of things we don't like. But we have to say, even the not-so-great government was established by God, because that's what it says right here.
Let's swing the camera around from the other side. This was from the every person side, but in verse 2, he says, therefore, whoever resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves.
It's a very important statement there. Now, it doesn't specify here where the condemnation comes from. It could have a double meaning, because later he talks about the civil authorities bearing the sword. So they may resist and end up, like Jesus said to Peter, those that live by the sword die by the sword. So they may find punishment from civil authorities for their resisting, but then they'll also have to face punishment by God in the future because they're resisting him who set up the authorities.
No matter what you do with this, we are still called to live in accord with duly constituted authority.
That's what it says.
That's the beauty. Okay.
You know, Dick, there's an illustration of this because whenever we discuss this, and I've taught through Romans quite a few times in my life, and I've done so in a discussion group, you know, like our Sunday school class, and people want to say, well, but aren't there times where this government is wicked? Let's say the government's saying you can't preach the gospel. Yes, indeed, in which case we'd say we have to obey God rather than men. One of the best illustrations of how to draw these distinctions is in Daniel chapter 6. And I don't have time to read Daniel 6, but you could go look it up for yourself.
What's the point of it all?
Daniel 6, the king was going to give Daniel a high level of authority in Babylon. Okay? And the other satraps, as they were called, were jealous. They didn't like the idea Daniel was going to be given this authority. So they decided to try to find something wrong with Daniel in order to discredit him. And they could find nothing. He was a perfect citizen as far as the laws of the Medes and Persians were concerned. And they said, well, the only way we're going to be able to undo Daniel is in regard to the laws of his God, because he was a monotheistic Jew who worshiped the God of Israel. So they tricked the king into making a law and putting it into the laws of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be changed, saying that no one for 30 days can pray to anybody but to the king, and anybody that does is going to be punished. And so Daniel prayed. He disobeyed that law. I think that that's a pretty good illustration of the role that the Christian has, that we ought to be good citizens. But if the government is interfering with our preaching of the gospel, praying, worshiping, and doing the things we need to do, that whatever is appropriate, like in some countries, they start underground churches, but we need to obey God on those things.
There's a line from Leon Morris, not exact quote, but just a concept here. God has willed orderly states, and if one sets self against order, he rebels against God. And I think of a line back in the 60s, I can remember those type of things. In the 60s, when the people were marching in the streets, one of the things was, no government is better than bad government. And nobody wants bad government, but at least there's an element of order in that kind of thing.
Oh, absolutely.
And secondly, there's a subjective element in what's bad government. You know, what to one person is bad, the other person is just fine.
Oh, there's a huge divide.
Yes.
Our whole political system in America, the biggest division going on right now is over defining good and evil.
That's exactly right.
You know, one party defines evil along moral terms, homosexuality, abortion, and that's how most Christians believe. That's what I believe, that's moral evil is something to be resisted.
Yes.
And the other party defines evil along the lines of, somebody has more money than somebody else does.
That's true.
Okay.
Third group is how you treat the environment.
Yeah, that's another issue about, okay, what's the human role vis-a-vis the environment? Are we to subdue, like it says in Genesis, or are we to look at the earth as a goddess and worship it? There's a lot of issues like that. But what we're saying is that we ought to be thankful there is a government and that we have an orderly system. And any time in history where they haven't had a stable civil government.
Yes.
And what happens is bands of thugs go about and terrorize everybody and victimize whoever's weak and kill whoever they want and steal whatever they want. That's what happened when you have anarchy. So Christians that think that anarchy would be better than some government that we have that's not so great really don't understand the Bible, nor do they understand human nature.
Amen. Okay, verse 3. For rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. Now, that's a pretty straight statement.
Yes. Now, as I think Leon Morris pointed out and other scholars, these things here are general statements about what's generally true, not ironclad absolutes. There's been plenty of instances in history when people were punished for good behavior.
True.
Because wicked people get in power at times in history. But generally speaking, and that's all you can say about this, is a general guideline about what God intended, that we'd have civil governments and that they'd restrain evil. And when they're functioning in the ordinary way that they function.
Okay, then we should be rewarded with our sense of well-being because we are doing right.
Exactly. Okay. So to the degree this is true in any given country, to that degree, the citizens are blessed. And like the passage you quoted in Jeremiah, pray for the well-being of the country that you're in.
It'll benefit you.
It will benefit you. And they were going into Babylon, which was their enemy that had conquered them. And they were told to pray for the welfare of that city, Babylonia. So Christians are instructed, we're to pray for the governors, kings, whatever authorities that we have, and be good citizen. And we don't want to have fear of authority. Paul says, be a good citizen. Pay your taxes, take care of your responsibilities, don't be a lawbreaker, and you'll benefit. It's over the country you live in.
According to this verse, what should be the mindset of the evil?
Well, we ought to certainly shun evil, but we ought to be thankful that we have a system of civil government that punishes evil, and it's even for our good to restrain us.
Well, I was looking on the other side of it, just the idea of what about the evil? They're to fear.
Yeah. It's the way it should be.
Yeah, you know, every once in a while, you see some of the brazen breakers of law. They don't look like they fear anything.
That's the people that terrorize normal citizens.
Yes.
The terrorists
yes.
are people that have no fear of authority and are so brazen, they feel like they can do absolutely anything.
Well, bottom line, Christians are to be law-abiding citizens.
There it is.
That's it. Okay. Would you read verse 4, please?
For it is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid. For it does not bear the sword for nothing. For it is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath upon the one who practices evil.
Okay, go back to the original point that we were making when we started about whether verses 1 through 7 fit here. there's a really good reason. We were talking about don't take vengeance mm-hmm. was warned to us in chapter 12, right? Mm-hmm. And?
Here's the Avengers, the civil government.
Bingo.
Okay, so the word minister is diakonos, where we get our word deacon. So the civil government is a servant of God. So there's a real high view here of God's sovereignty.
You know, the people that are in the power positions that aren't doing as they should be doing should be fearing God.
They should. And we should remember what we've learned from reading the whole Bible and the whole counsel of God. Look at what God said in Isaiah, for example, about Cyrus the Persian, that he was his servant.
Yes.
And he was going to send Cyrus in to defeat Babylon and to send the Jews back to Israel.
I believe he called Babylon his servant as he came in and took over Israel and deported everybody.
Well, actually, he says all things are his servant. Okay. Yes. I'm writing another book, and I was quoting some of these guys from the Emergent Church who talk about God's dreams. In other words, God has a dream for the future that may or may not come true.
Oh.
And so I quoted that. What I did was, in contrast, is I went back and quoted passages out of the Bible that say all things are God's servant and that he declares the ends from the beginning. So how can you just ignore clear statements throughout the Bible about God's sovereignty over all things?
Exactly.
And then say God is dreaming about an optimal future that won't come to pass unless we help him. In this passage that we're looking at, it's a very high view of the sovereignty of God, that God even is in control of the wicked rulers, and they're doing his bidding in some way. God causes all things to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose. So here we have whatever civil government is in existence at the time, an emperor in Rome, being a servant of God, same idea found in Isaiah in the Old Testament.
Well, this other phrase about it doesn't bear the sword for nothing.
The sword here means a punitive capacity.
Which is appropriate.
Yeah,
they are to be the ones.
Yeah, they punish evildoers, and they have different ways throughout history that evildoers have been punished, and certainly have been cases where Christians were even martyred. But that was because they got into one of these situations like Daniel, where they had to obey God rather than men.
Here's an example out of 1 Timothy 2, verse 2. We're to pray for kings and all who are in authority so that we may lead a tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and dignity. So we're to pray for them.
Yeah.
That's our job, right?
And it's the desire of Christians to live a tranquil life in godliness and dignity. It should be our desire. And sometimes it's happened in history where it was not possible, because Christians were hated and murdered and persecuted. But it shouldn't be because we've made ourselves evildoers or made ourselves insurrectionists.
Right, I agree. Okay, 5, 6, and 7, would you read them, please?
Wherefore, it is necessary to be in subjection, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For because of this, you also pay taxes, for rulers are servants of God, devoting themselves to this very thing. Render to all what is due them, tax to whom tax is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor.
Okay, verse 5, therefore it's necessary to be in subjection, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. What's he saying?
Probably he's thinking about God's wrath, all right?
Okay.
So, yeah, we ought to fear God, but also it's the right thing to do. To violate civil law invites punishment and violates one's conscience.
And your conscience is telling you it's not right to go through a stop sign. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Okay, simple things. All right. How about verse 6? It said, because of this, you pay taxes.
Because civil governments are ordained by God, and Christians are to obey them. And the taxes, the word literally in the Greek is tribute, the taxes are the means of maintaining a civil government.
But there are people that say we are not to pay taxes. I mean, you've heard that.
Oh, there are. Yeah, there's Christians that have advocated refusal to pay taxes.
And they write books.
Yeah, they write books. Wow. I've told a story before of a guy that I knew back in the 70s who was a new Christian. And he's a guy I used to just get together with, and we prayed together and talked about living a Christian life. And he was working for a Christian guy, and he had worked a whole year, and he never got a W-2. And so at the end of the year, he says, well, I need to pay my taxes. Where's my W-2? And the guy says, oh, I don't believe in taxes. And he handed him a book about how why Christians ought not to pay taxes.
Oh, man.
So he had to go and file taxes and try to pay
Social Security.
Yeah, all of this stuff. He was in all kinds of trouble because his
Oh, wow.
Christian guy didn't believe in paying taxes.
Oh.
But frankly, the thing that will keep us out of the most trouble is to really believe the whole counsel of God and to read the scripture and obey by God's grace what it says. So there's no excuse for a Christian coming up with some I shouldn't pay my taxes scheme. Jesus said to do it. Paul said to do it. And as I read Justin Martyr in 150, while the Christians were still persecuted by the Romans, that's why he wrote the apology, said, we'll pay our taxes, but we're going to worship God, and you can't stop us from doing that.
Okay, well, in verse 7, you know, again, we're talking meaning, implication, and application, but he says, render to all what is due them. He mentions taxes, customs, fear, and honor. What ties all this together?
However societies are constituted, there is, how would you say it, a duly recognized way of behavior. For example, in England, you see how they address the Queen or
yes.
in the House of Parliament.
Yes.
And so if we go into a civil court, we call the judge Your Honor.
Yes.
Right? Because that's the norms of our society. So Christians ought to be following those norms in doing so in a way that they're not making themselves rebelling against the established pattern. Okay, so you should treat people with honor. Now, maybe you don't think that some, let's say there's a senator and you disagree with everything he says and everything he votes on. But if you meet him, you should treat him with respect for the position that he has.
Exactly.
Honor to whom honor's due. And if you don't think he's really that honorable, pray that God will get you a more honorable senator next time around.
How would you wrap up these seven verses?
Well, here's something that tells us what Paul's thinking. The word rulers are servants of God. He uses a word in the Greek that's often used of priestly service. And it's kind of strange that he'd use that word. In a sense, he has a real strong view of God's sovereignty over rulers.
Yes.
And that God sets up the kings and he draws around the boundaries. And these guys, whether they even believe in God or not, are somehow doing service for God.
That's good.
And it's really a strong statement that Paul's making here. I think we'd be better off changing our theology than ignoring the scripture if we don't like it. I feel comforted by it because I like the idea of knowing that God's ultimately in control, because if he wasn't, how hopeless would history look to us?
I like it. Okay. That's it for today, folks. For those of you who might want to contact us or visit our church, we're Twin City Fellowship in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Our telephone number is 952-935-3100, or you can find us on the web at cicministry.org. For Critical Issues Commentary, this is Dick Cuffell
and Bob Duway.
See you next week.